Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Arto Ocal here with you every Tuesday, Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts, as well as the NHL on ESPN YouTube, where you can see us clearly in the same room again.
In the same room, no Zoom this time. We're here in Bristol. We're co-hosting The Point. By the time you see this, you'll have already seen what I assume will win the Murrow Award for Journalism
Peabody.
On The Point.
Sure.
Yeah, you and I, they're
Murrow,
talking.
Murrow, Peabody,
it's,
Emmy, the
it's
trifecta.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
It is. Actually, yeah, let's rate your performance before it even happens. I thought you did all right. Solid 7.5
yeah,
out of 10.
Yeah, no, I was excited. My fly was up. That's always checks one box. It's always a pleasure to be here with you in Bristol doing this live.
Yes.
In our little studio.
Yes.
Stanley Cup, custom skates. Let's go.
Yes. I'm actually thrilled that you are on The Point with me for the whole show, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
So like, I know that we're sort of pulling the curtain. I mean, you won't hear this until after it airs anyway, but you're here for the whole show, which is awesome.
Me, you, and Emily, which is a lot of fun.
Yes, it's
like the
be
meeting of the
great
two podcasts that
I'm gonna have to be like, welcome to The Point on Ice or something like that. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out later. I owe you a congratulations.
Yeah, please.
Congratulations to your New Jersey Devils.
Oh, for what?
For setting a franchise record for most penalty minutes in one period.
Oh,
since the team moved.
All right.
The record
Thank
was
you. Yes.
Yeah. Hang on. Where is it? 86.
86. Yeah. Okay.
They didn't wait that long.
No, they didn't.
Madison Square Garden, right at center ice.
I didn't get a chance to speak my piece on this, so I'll speak it now. I have absolutely no problem with the Devils exacting revenge on Matt Rempe. It needed to happen. He didn't fight the last time they played after injuring a bunch of their players because the Rangers said, don't fight. Remember, he came up and beat up everybody, and then the Rangers were like, don't fight. So the Devils still had to finish the story, Arda,
on that later.
And take on Matt Rempe. Did it need to be a line brawl? No. And both the teams are a bit cagey about who started, who didn't. I tend to believe the team that is trying to exact revenge on the other team maybe was the catalyst for the line brawl. Here's my problem with it. A line brawl, while completely popping the Devils fans, I'm sure, satisfying the bloodlust of Devils fans, the line brawl comes less than 24 hours after this team pissed its season away against the Pittsburgh Penguins with a third period blown lead, on top of a loss to Buffalo, on top of a loss to Ottawa, on top of a loss to the Arizona Coyotes. The Devils had a lane. They ended up crashing the car. So congratulations. You bloodied Matt Rempe. Maybe we can hang a banner in Prudential Center.
Matt Rempe revenge.
Matt Rempe bloodied 2024. It's the only banner the Devils are getting this season. I have a newborn daughter. I know what a full diaper looks like. That was a full diaper moment for the Devils last night. They knew their season was done. They're just trying to do anything to energize their fan base. It kind of came off a little pathetic, if I'm being honest with you, as cool as it was, from a Devils fan's perspective.
But it needed to be done.
Well, listen, Rempe needed to get his comeuppance.
Yes.
But the rest of it was just circus act, petulant nonsense, I thought.
Well,
that might make me a bad Devils fan, I don't know. And I'm not saying it wasn't great. I think many
non-NHL
day-to-day fans have talked about the line brawl since then. It was on national television on TNT, first 2 seconds of the game. But from a perspective of, oh, this is all very depressing. And by the way, what do they end up doing? Blowing another third period lead against the Rangers in that game after taking out two of their best defensemen in the line brawl. So it just became kind of like sad. It was a sad moment for a Devils fan.
So the Devils have squandered, like you said, full diaper newborn. I know that feeling also all too well.
Yeah.
They've squandered essentially their ability to get back into the Eastern Conference wildcard race or stay relevant in it.
Yeah.
The Flyers, the Capitals, the Red Wings, the Penguins. There's a lot of teams still battling for that final wild card spot. So let's answer some questions as it pertains to the East.
Yes.
Who makes the cut?
We're doing the show before the Caps and Penguins meet, which is going to probably decide a lot of this stuff. And also how very exciting that Sid and Ovi are playing a relevant game. In early April. We did not think that was going to be the case this season. I'm going to take the Flyers and Capitals. I think the Caps have shown a resiliency that is pretty impressive. I think the Caps have shown they've got the goaltending to get themselves over the hump. And I'll take the Flyers because John Tortorella at this point is that jockey who in the last furlong of the race is just given the whip. It's the whip every step the horse is taking, he's getting the whip. He's pulling out everything in his bag of tricks as a National Hockey League coach to get this team over the hump. He's benching captains. He's calling out players. He says rightfully that this team knew how to get in a position to make the playoffs, but not how to be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think there's no better guy at this point to have behind your bench than Tortorella. He's going to do everything he can to squeeze water out of this lump of coal that is the Philadelphia Flyers and get them into the playoffs. Because if he doesn't, it's a wasted season. Let's be honest. They either make the playoffs or they have squandered their draft probabilities in a fruitless campaign to have made the playoffs for a team that probably should be looking a little bit closer at the future than the present.
Absolutely. And if you did not watch John Tortorella's press conference, I believe it was either Wednesday or Tuesday. It was 15 minutes long. Awesome. There's 90 seconds that's floating around social media that's the most pertinent or the most quote-worthy. Watch the whole thing. It really left an impression on me. Like, Torts is a quotable guy.
What made
an
impression about it for you?
Well, the fact that he said, look, this stuff follows me around. The fact that I'm tough to play for, etc. But he made a really good point, exactly what you said there.
Yeah.
He's cracking the whip, but he's doing it with purpose. It's not like he's just being a jerk to his players.
Right.
He has a purpose. He sees the benefit from them. I understand that. I see that.
Yeah.
I feel like there are... Look, there's rightful criticism from certain people.
Right.
There's also, to me, maybe sour grapes from people who didn't like that approach.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's a passionate guy who wants his team to win. He wants his best from his players. And he's taking the approach that he thinks maximizes that effort. And guess what? He has a proven track record, so he's allowed to do that.
You sound like you're about to run through a wall for John Tortorella.
I absolutely would. But then again, I've never been coached by him.
Yeah.
I've worked with him, so I've seen different sides of him. But that press conference really, like, I urge people to watch that and then come to a conclusion.
Like I said, the thing I love the most about it, besides the sort of self-reflection that I think comes with age for Torts.
Sure.
I don't think we're hearing that from, like, the Vancouver Torts, you know. And I thought a lot about the Vancouver Torts because I thought at one point that Peter Laviolette and Travis Green were going to fight each other. And that line brawl, like, Torts almost fought Bob Hartley that time in Vancouver. It was the notion of we all got here, but these guys don't know what it takes to get even a little bit further. And I thought that was brilliant. I think other coaches, Andrew Brunette being one of them on the Predators, are also kind of preaching the same thing right now, which is it's you've only done so much, but now you got to, you know, coffee is for closers and you ain't earned your coffee yet. Like, you got to play that much better to get in and then to be in the playoffs.
Look what you've done at third gear. Imagine what you could do at fifth gear.
Yeah. So I got the Flyers and the Capitals. Who do you have?
Just for the narrative, Penguins and Caps. That'd be great. I would love that. I think it'd be hilarious. It'd be awesome.
That'd be really good.
It'd almost be like a one last ride, you know?
The Penguins, you know, the Penguins are an interesting team because for a long time when I was looking at the East and people were saying, well, who could get back into it? I said the two teams you could envision getting back into it are the Devils and the Penguins because both those teams have the ability to roll off a bunch of wins in a row. Mm-hmm. And in the Penguins' case, they're doing it. They're picking up points, but they're also doing it on the back of Sidney Crosby. Like, that is the most exciting thing about the Penguins right now is the fact that this rally, this relevance that they've earned in the playoff race is almost completely owed to the way that Crosby's playing.
So, to that point, Roman Josi, in that Predators stretch of victories, started to get Hart Trophy murmurs.
Yeah.
If the Pittsburgh Penguins make the playoffs, I expect to see Sidney Crosby as a Hart Trophy finalist.
All right, well, we'll get to it later in the show, because we do have the new official NHL Awards Watch totals that we're going to give you.
Excellent tease.
But that being said, I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think you're wrong. Because I do think that if there's one thing about the Hart race that we know, and we're going to get to it in a bit, it's that there is a bit of wishy-washy wavering happening in the last weeks of the season. And you could have a, by God, that's Sidney Crosby's music, and have him end up an MVP candidate.
1,000%.
Yeah.
All right. Sidney Crosby does not fall in this particular category I'm about to talk about. He has 3 Stanley Cups. But there are some players that you're like, wow, the grizzled veteran getting into the playoffs. Hey, maybe it's their time. The narrative fits. It would be nice, feel-good story for neutral hockey fans. So let's play a game called You Get a Cup. You Get a Cup. You Get a Cup. You Get a Cup. So who are the people that you're like, you know what? I'm not necessarily a fan of this team, but I would love to see this guy win the Stanley.
I would say I'm a fan of the Dallas Stars. I like them as a bridesmaid that could become the bride this year. But the guy that they have a few of these guys on the team. Ryan Suter, I think, is the guy who has played the most NHL games without having won the Cup. They've got Matt Duchene, Jamie Benn, obviously, on the team, too. But the guy that I think is the guy I want to see hoisted is obviously Joe Pavelski. Pavelski has played 1,326 games in the National Hockey League. And these are not just games, Arda. These are tough games. These are stand in front of the crease and take the puck to the face and then it goes in the net kind of game. This guy has sacrificed his body for years in San Jose and then in Dallas for the betterment of his team. He is an American Olympian. He's one of my favorite players. I love Joe Pavelski. Joe Pavelski, you get a cup.
Okay. I'm going to go with Connor McDavid.
All right.
That's an obvious answer. Yeah. Maybe the most glaring answer. And I've said this on the show before, Wish. To me, the image that has to be captured in our lifetime is Connor McDavid hoisting the trophy above his head.
It has to happen.
Has to happen.
Yeah.
He is the poster for hockey. He is the best player in the world today and will go down as one of the greatest in history. Mm-hmm. He's remarkable. He does things on the ice no one else does. Hasn't won a Stanley Cup, will always follow him around and be the number one thing discussed about him.
So let me ask you this.
As he doesn't win one.
Let me ask you this about Connor.
Okay.
Like, will they hang that around his neck like an albatross?
Yes.
Or will they say it was the mismanagement of the Edmonton Oilers that cost him the Cup?
At some point, people will say it was on him to leave.
Okay.
I believe the narrative will become, sure, up until a point, we can blame the team.
Right.
But at some point, if Connor is to remain loyal to the Edmonton Oilers for his entire career, and they don't win a Stanley Cup, at some point, they will say, why didn't you just go and chase a Stanley Cup and bring up the Ray Bourques of the world, et cetera?
Because the Ovechkin thing before they won was it was on him. And I think part of it is because Sid won, and he didn't win. And also,
Connor doesn't have an equivalent.
And also,
like that.
He's Russian and gets lots more criticism than Canadian players do. I think you're right. I think at some point it'll be on McDavid to be like, why didn't you leave or why didn't you go chase a cup somewhere? But I think for now, it's probably a lot more, you know, Robin Williams and Good Will Hunting. It's not your fault. Like, I feel like a lot of people think it's probably on like Ken Holland and the Oilers more than it is on McDavid right now.
So therefore, Connor McDavid, you get a cup.
Brent Burns, the Carolina Hurricanes. You've played a lot of games in your life. You've also sacrificed your body. Look at that man's mouth. My God. Looks like Stonehenge.
Looks like Stonehenge.
He plays the vital role for the Carolina Hurricanes. I think the Hurricanes have maybe their best shot this season to win the cup. And let's face it, Arda, the reason we want Brent Burns to win the cup is not only to see a veteran hoist it for the first time, but to see what kinds of animals will eat out of the cup on Brent Burns' ranch.
There'll be like snakes around it.
Snakes. He's probably got mythical creatures back there, like a baby dragon or something.
Has that ever happened? Like a boa constrictor around the Stanley Cup eating from the top?
I believe when Marchand won it. That's the image many people had. Brent Burns, you get a cup.
Kyle Okposo, you're an affable guy.
Oh, absolutely.
People love you. You were the captain of the Buffalo Sabres. You get traded to a cup contender at the trade deadline, and people would love nothing more than to see you get your due because you've been a great ambassador for hockey and a great teammate. From anyone that you speak to that has played with you in the National Hockey League. So, Kyle Okposo, you get a cup.
All right. Finally, for me, imagine coming into this league, Arda. Imagine being a player coming into this league, and you get there after the dynasty. Like, months after the dynasty is over. That's what happened to Artemi Panarin with the Chicago Blackhawks. He arrived right after they won their last cup during that run. He has been an absolutely fantastic player, a star player, an all-star player. And this season for the New York Rangers, after he shaved his cherubic locks and went all cue ball, he has been an MVP-level player for the Rangers in their pursuit for their first Stanley Cup since 1994 and second since 1940. Artemi Panarin is a guy that I would love to see celebrate a cup. I think it'd be really cool. I think he's a good dude, and I think he's a fan favorite. I think people would be very happy to see him win a Stanley Cup. So Artemi Panarin, the bread man, referenced on Curb, potentially lifting a cup, you get a cup.
And he also, in reference to the reference on Curb, said, I will stick handle better. So I'm glad that we got that. Jeff Skinner, you get a cup.
Jeff Skinner.
Wait a minute. Hold on. That doesn't make sense. He's on the Sabres. They're not making the playoffs. Why did I just say that? Okay. I'm projecting here in the future. And this is why.
Okay, please.
Jeff Skinner.
Because they do have a 0.1% chance of making it, Arda.
No, that's not why I brought up Jeff Skinner. But yes, thank you for putting that out there. Jeff Skinner made NHL history this season.
Oh, did he?
He is the first player. There are 393 players that have played at least 1,000 games in the NHL. Mm-hmm. Jeff Skinner is the first in NHL history to reach the 1,000-game mark without ever playing a postseason game.
Jesus.
Ever.
Oh, my God.
The previous drought, let me pull this up, was Ron Hainsey at 907 games.
Wow.
That was the previous drought. Jeff Skinner's the first.
Wow.
That's a lot of games
to
play.
A lot of
seasons without getting into the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I'm bending the rules of our game here a little bit. What I'm saying is, before it's all said and done for Jeff Skinner, I would like to take this opportunity to say, Jeff Skinner, you, hopefully eventually, get a cup.
Do you think Jeff Skinner's family just books vacations in April? They just do it, but he happens to make the playoffs. They're like, we'll gladly cancel. We'll gladly pay the fee to Marriott for canceling. You know, maybe it's like a psychological
thing. Are you saying at this point they don't even do the cancellation fee extra $25 or whatever it costs?
It's like, Jeff, I see your last game's on Wednesday. We're going to be in Cabo on Friday with the kids and whatever.
What would you like your tea time to be?
Yeah, what would you like your tea time to be?
Oh, my gosh. By the way, just real quick. I loved the Sabres 1,000-game celebration for him, where they did the reverse between two stalls, where they did it for him.
Yeah.
Walks in, didn't know what was happening, and everyone's dressed up like him. Alex Touch. Like, everything was hilarious.
Great stuff.
Great job. So speaking of somebody who hasn't won a Stanley Cup yet, and someone who has been on teams that have won Stanley Cups or have gone to the Cup Final, a great interview here with Jonathan Drouin.
Indeed.
All right, joining us here on The Drop, very happy to have Jonathan Drouin of the Colorado Avalanche. Jonathan, I have to start with this. I see you have a beard. I know that at one point this season, you went on like a 19-game goal drought, right? And then suddenly you shave, and then you score. And you tell everyone, you know what? Maybe it has to do with the beard. Maybe if I keep shaving, I'll keep scoring. My first question to you is this. What are you going to do in the postseason, man?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what? Like, this is a tough one.
Yeah, to be honest, I think I was at home and I didn't want to go to the barber that day. And I was trying to just trim it nicely and ended up having a hole. And then I had to pretty much go skin and really shave it for real. So, but yeah, kind of got that goal drought out of the way. And guys were kind of bugging me with the shaving after that, too.
Yeah, there's no way you can go beardless in the playoffs, no matter how it feels to you superstitiously, right?
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't think I have the... You know, in the morning, shave my beard every morning or every night. I'll have that in me. I like growing it a little bit. And at one point, it gets too long and it's time to do something.
Well, it's exciting that you get a chance to grow your beard for the playoffs, man. Yeah. 48 points, 72 games this season for the Avs. Your agent, Alan Walsh, wondered if you were indeed the NHL's comeback player this season. Do you feel like it's a comeback for you?
Yeah. Stats wise, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you look, obviously, I've had a couple of rough seasons the last little while at Montreal. But last year, I thought I actually grew as a player with Marty St. Louis. He helped me a lot. Stats weren't coming. Goals or assists weren't coming that way I'm used to it. But I think I evolved as a player. I owe a lot of credit to him. I think he showed me a facet of the game I've maybe never seen and kind of helped me towards this year. And obviously, I've been very lucky to join a team like this with so many superstars like Kale, Nate, Miko, Taser. The list goes on. And the staff's been great here, too. They're very smart, and it's been an easy transition.
Okay, let's talk about one of those superstars, Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you're joining the Colorado Avalanche for this season. Now you are his teammate. You have been his adversary in the past. Two-part question. How surprised are you that Nathan MacKinnon has not won a Hart Trophy so far in his career?
Yeah, part one of that is very surprising. Obviously, you look at all the season he's had and the success he's had, and I think this year he's taken it to another level. with his play and his playmaking. I think I've said that many times to a lot of people. I don't think his playmaking was that elite in junior. He's worked on that very much with a lot of people, and you know, credit to him. He puts a lot of work towards this game, and it's paying off.
Okay, so we, as you know, the voters, especially for the Hart Trophy, sometimes narrative plays into it. Hey, Nathan MacKinnon has never won a Hart Trophy. He's having a gangbuster season. Yeah. Maybe it's his year. But as his teammate, as someone who sees him night in and night out, his compete level, his effort, his talent, make the case for us. Why should Nathan MacKinnon win the Hart Trophy this year?
Yeah, to be, for me, it's very easy. I think I came here and you look at the leaders off the ice. You know, obviously Nate, Miko, Nate, they work so hard on their game. They take care of their body, the way they eat. You know, it's not, you guys just see their product on the ice at 7 p.m., but the stuff that happens before a game, he's one of the elite guys in this league, like the Crosbys and those guys that take care of their body, that work on, you know, retrieving pucks off rims, the things you wouldn't see or you wouldn't even think of. We do so much of that stuff. And, you know, for him, not the care he has for the game and his own game as well. And like I said, the off-ice stuff is off the charts, the bike rides after games. And yeah, he takes care of all the little things he can to make sure he feels the greatest at the, you know, when the puck drops. And it's hard to do, especially on an 82-game season, to have that commitment. I think that's why this team's so great. Their leaders work so hard and everyone kind of follows.
He may have played a role, I think, in you coming to Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Like what was sort of your interaction with him, and from what your understanding is, what kind of role did Nate play in you coming there?
Yeah, a lot of it is Nate, obviously. Obviously my agent and C-Mac and I've talked, but yeah, Nate was the guy pushing for me to come here. And it wasn't very hard for him to push. I was, you know, interested in coming here with the coach they have and the staff and the players. And Denver is a beautiful city, even nicer than I thought. And but yeah, Nate gave me a couple of texts, a couple of phone calls, and we obviously made that decision to come here. And I haven't really looked back since.
That's awesome. You've been one of the more inspiring players in this league. I'm not gonna lie to you. I think there's a lot of people that are rooting for you and have hoped that you could have the kind of season that you're having with Colorado. You've been very brave and very candid talking about mental health in the past. I was wondering about interactions with people that might have been inspired by or helped by your candor with mental health, and what those interactions have been like for you.
They're good. I think I'm at that point where I'm open about it. Obviously, I came out, you know, with my anxiety and all that stuff. And, you know, now it's easy to talk to people. It's easy to go see someone when you might think, sometimes you might be wrong, but it's better to go see someone and ask them if everything's all right and everything's doing well. Can I help you with something? And I could be wrong at that point where everything's good with them. But like, I like going out now and talking about it. I think obviously with Gerard's situation this year, I, you know, kind of try to slowly talk about it, make sure he feels comfortable and everything. And it's a step back, but it's a step forward at the same time. And, you know, you get a lot of positive you could look at when you have the help you need now, the feedbacks from people, my family, my friends, everyone's aware of it now. And it's easy to kind of, sometimes you'll have that day where you're not feeling right, or you're not feeling, you know, happy or that stuff. And it's okay. And you have people to kind of rely on, and it helps me a lot for sure.
Just to that point, like it was very inspiring for a lot of people maybe going through something similar to see an athlete, someone in the public eye like yourself, do that, right? Like it was you act as a role model in that case. And I'm curious, like, we're not that far removed from a time where the paradigm was different, right? No, you have to tough it out. Don't worry about your problems. You got to just, you know, hockey guy, hashtag hockey guy, more than anything. Like, what was the support like, not only from your family and friends, but your teammates and other players around the league when you did this?
It was huge. I've got many texts. I'm not going to say names, but a lot of texts from people from other teams and players that have gone through that. And it's nice to get that. Oh, it's almost comfort to see you're not alone and all that stuff. And there's other people dealing with it. And I encourage people to, you know, to fix those, you know, problems or issues you have, and go towards that like you can. And to be honest, it's not better to sit at home and be by yourself and have the overthinking all that stuff. I think you have to get some help. You have to have people, you have to have support casts. And but like you said, it was nice to have, you know, people around the league, from staff to players, send text or a call and kind of reassure everything's good. And it was nice. I think the NHL does a very good job, even more now than they did ever. And we're very lucky to have the NHLPA and all the programs we have.
It's great to hear. Awesome. You're an unrestricted free agent after this season. I assume you might want to make more than $825,000 next season. That's just my assumption. You can correct me if I'm wrong. are you hoping to re-sign with Colorado, or do you think that you might have to go and test the market after the season?
Yeah, I'm hoping to re-sign in Colorado. I've had a great time here. Yeah, hopefully it happens. Right now, that's not really where my head's at. Obviously, playoffs are coming around, but yeah, when the time comes and everything's settled down and the season and the playoffs are over, we'll have a chat to see if we can, you know, stay here. Obviously, I love Colorado. I love everyone here, and it's been an easy transition. My family likes it too. So, but we're not at that point. We'll let it be for how long it is, and we'll figure that stuff out when it's all over.
How do you compartmentalize that? Like, give me advice, because whenever my contract is up, like, that's all I'm thinking about, right? So, like, how do you do it? Like, how do you say, you know what, I got to focus on playing, I got to focus on playoffs, and not worry about that stuff?
Yeah, I think it's hard, but it's easy at the same time. We have a chance to win a cup, so I think everyone's focus is on that right now, and my contract stuff for next year kind of gets pushed aside. You know, right now when you're the last 10, 15 games, all you hear is playoffs and getting ready for playoffs and all the details in your game. And I think the staff does a great job too of, you know, just making sure we're focusing on what we're supposed to do every night. And but yeah, it's in the back of my head, but it's not something that's the main focus.
All right. Before we let you go, last question for you, just to clarify this. So the beard will stay during the playoffs.
For sure.
We're not shaving it.
No,
even if it's like two games.
Day one, but yeah.
Day one, but it's staying as long as cup final, it has been untouched.
Yeah, it will be untouched.
Do you groom it? Like, do you put beard oils? Like,
I try,
what happens?
I don't have that that beautiful Brent Burns beard or all it doesn't go that far. It's kind of still like kind of hanging. It doesn't look too good. So, but yeah, you know, as long as we go to the Stanley Cup finals, I have that ugly beard for sure.
How do you feel about pre-playoff growth? Do you feel like as soon as you know you've clinched,
I think it's
you
cheating.
Start growing it?
Unless you've done it all year, like I said, like the Burns and all those guys. If you've done it from day one and you have that big beard, I guess you can't really chop it off. But I'd call it cheating a little bit for some guys where they have that, you know, 2-3 weeks of ahead time for the playoffs. But I guess some people, even me, I kind of need it to maybe a little head start to get going.
I like your rule, day one. Day one shave.
And we go from there and leave.
I like it. All right, Jonathan, you've been great with your time. Thank you very much for joining us here on The Drop.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks again to Jonathan Drouin for joining us here on the show. We talked about it earlier, the Hart Trophy, and actually let's expand it to all trophies. So Trophy Watch,
all right.
You're on it. What's happening?
Every month we do the NHL Awards Watch on ESPN.com. We get the actual ballots from the actual voters to let you know exactly how the voting is going. No computers, no prognostication from knuckleheads like me. These are the votes. And this was the final edition of the NHL Awards Watch before the actual voting begins. Let's start with Best Picture, man. Let's start with the Hart Trophy, MVP. As you heard on The Point yesterday, Nathan MacKinnon leads the voting right now. 77% of the first place votes on our writers' ballots going to Nathan MacKinnon of the Colorado Avalanche. The other finalists, the other top two vote-getters, or top three vote-getters, Nikita Kucherov of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Connor McDavid of the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, we have the Sidney Crosby run-in theory that we've already presented. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this about the race. It's pretty clear that there is a little bit of wiggle room for the MacKinnon voters. We had a number of people saying that if McDavid hits 100 assists, if the Oilers end up winning the Pacific Division, they could see themselves maybe reconsidering their MacKinnon vote. I think there's also people that are reconsidering the vote if Auston Matthews hits 70 goals. The support for MacKinnon is robust, but I would not say it's coalesced quite yet.
You said this early on a previous episode of The Drop. The narrative of him having never won a Hart Trophy is very strong. So to me, I like flow charts. Okay, I'm a left brain mathy guy. So if Nathan MacKinnon wins Art Ross, then Hart Trophy secure. But if Connor McDavid wins Art Ross, I believe he wins I think that's an Art Ross situation.
I still think that the never won it before thing is more of a pull than you're giving it credit for, because there are people that believe that MacKinnon was robbed of the Hart the year that Taylor Hall won it. And I think there's people that want to make do on that. And again, everybody I just mentioned has a Hart Trophy except for MacKinnon.
How crazy would it be then?
Yeah.
Taylor Hall wins it, strictly definition based. You know, he carries the Devils to the playoffs. Imagine if MacKinnon's Nova Scotia buddy, Sidney Crosby,
does the same thing.
Does the same thing,
yeah. I think MacKinnon ends up winning it for the reason is that because he hasn't won it yet.
Okay.
And he also, I mean,
no one's going to complain if he wins.
The streaks that he had, the point streak at home, the first player in NHL history to have two different 19-game point streaks in the same season. Like, he's got a little history. He's clearly been great. That being said, I'm a Kucherov man, and will remain a Kucherov man for MVP.
Yeah, it's number one. You know what? Norris.
Yeah, Norris Trophy. Quinn Hughes leads with 54% of the vote. This is the race that has gotten crazy interesting for the reason that you mentioned before, which is that during the Predators' canceled U2 concert winning streak, Roman Josi not only played himself into the Hart Trophy conversation, but clearly into the Norris Trophy conversation. He and Kale McCarr are the other finalists behind Quinn Hughes, whose support dropped from about over 70% of the first place votes last month to only 54%. Roman Josi's got the big mo, baby. He's got the momentum right now in this race, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see if Hughes can hang on to the lead that he has for the Norris.
Okay, the only question I have here is, if and when Roman Josi wins the Norris Trophy, mm-hmm. which U2 song will be played as he walks to the stage?
It's a beautiful day. Come on.
But
to go back to it, Josi, he's won the Norris. McCarr, mm-hmm. he's won the Norris. Quinn Hughes is not. So that could be a factor
as well.
Listen, I'm a voter. I know how these people think.
Okay, I agree with that. I understand what you're saying, but he's still so young in his career. It's not like MacKinnon that's been in the league for like a decade plus. Quinn Hughes is still a pup in the NHL.
Now, what's interesting is this next award, none of them have won this award before.
Shocking.
It's the Calder, Rookie of the Year. Brock Faber's the leader, man. Brock Faber tied Bedard 2 months ago in the awards watch, moved ahead of him slightly last month, and is now at 54% of the first place votes for Rookie of the Year. Him and Bedard are the only two players to get first place votes. The other player that was mentioned most prominently is Luke Hughes of the Devils, if you're looking for a third candidate. But it's such an interesting philosophical debate, Arda. You have the people that look at Faber and say, how do you possibly not reward a rookie defenseman who is like fifth in the league in time on ice amongst all players and doing the things that he's done? And then you have the Bedard voters that are like, he's kind of Bedard.
Okay.
He's had an amazing, like, near point per game season on an absolute doormat of a team, and the injury that he had interrupted his season. He's still great. You've got to make him Rookie of the Year.
So, okay, I want to ask about that.
Yeah.
Take us into the minds of the voters.
Okay.
How much sway is there when you have a situation like this where maybe Brock Faber deserves it more based on this year, mm-hmm. but Connor Bedard, we already feel it and know it, is going to be a generational superstar. How much does that factor into people's voting for this trophy so it doesn't be like, oh, well, Bedard is amazing, but he didn't win the Calder?
Well, it factors in that you have people being like, it's obviously Bedard because he's going to be a more special player than Faber. Mm-hmm. And then you have people that I think probably look at what Bedard's done this year and say, those totals are nice, but they're not like transcendent for what the hype told us about. Mm. And, you know, I think the other factor here we should discuss is the age part of it. You know, Bedard being 18, Faber's 21. Faber played a few years of college hockey. Bedard made the jump from Canadian junior. Like, there's a little bit more of a maybe Bedard's doing the heavier lift because he's younger kind of thing, too. There's a lot at play here. It's a fascinating philosophical debate, but I think a lot of the Faber voters are pretty concrete right now and think that he should win.
Okay. Vezina seems unanimous.
Yeah, Hellebuck. Writers don't vote for it. The GMs do. Maybe they see it differently. But every writer that we surveyed said Hellebuck to win the Vezina for the second time in the Winnipeg Jets goalie's career.
Okay, yeah, no complaints there. How about the Selke? The Selke Trophy. What was it? I think was it Barkov leading last time?
He is, and he still is. 73% of the first place votes. He is the new Patrice Bergeron. Right? I mean, like he's just like. Write his name in magic marker at this point for the Selke. Andre Kopitar, Jordan Staal, the other two finalists right now, but Barkov's got this one in the bag.
Okay. Jack Adams?
Again, the broadcasters vote for it, not the writers. Rick Tocchet, he's got 50% of the vote, which tells you there's a lot of other candidates that are right behind him. He's the leader. He's been the leader all season. Andrew Brunette, again, from the Nashville Predators. That winning streak has certainly bolstered his case. And then, like we talked about before, man, when you have John Tortorella doing everything he possibly can to get the Flyers into the playoffs after the season they've had, there's going to be recognition of it, and he is the other coach most prominently mentioned. But it's Tockett's award to lose, I think, at this point.
Rick Tockett is awesome. He's made the Vancouver Canucks sing. Ditto Andrew Brunette. The Florida Panthers are the favorites to win the Stanley Cup on any given day. But if John Tortorella brings this team to the playoffs, mm-hmm. and they get a playoff spot, especially here's your narrative. After that press conference, if the Flyers suddenly go on a long winning streak to end the season and they secure a playoff spot, add that to recency bias, might put them over the hump.
Hey, listen, I agree. I think it's the broadcasters that vote on it, and then it comes down to how many of them like Torts versus how many of them like Tockett. Let's be honest, it could come down to that.
Tockett's probably a more well-liked guy.
You think?
Overall.
You think maybe. The guy that sometimes has 10-second press conferences and is petulant to everybody in the room might not be as likable as Rick Tockett?
It shouldn't come down to that.
It shouldn't, but it will.
But human beings, I understand. Here's what went into the thought process for Mascot Madness.
Oh, my God.
You voted on social media, and then we internalize and deliberate, go into the war room and decide who moves on. The final four is here. The votes have been tabulated.
Oh, my God.
Let's start with Victor E. Green of the Dallas Stars taking on Chance the Gila Monster of the Vegas Golden Knights. Victor E. Green won 69% of the vote. Are you surprised by this?
Yes. Yes, because I think Vegas has a very passionate fan base, and I figured they'd get behind Chance. But I have to say that the work was put in by not only Victor E. Green, themselves, but also the Dallas Stars to hype up the fans to get behind the vote. And that's a trouncing. That's a trouncing in that Final Four matchup.
This is what I'm going to say about this. Chance has been very vocal throughout this entire tournament.
Yes.
He's been using a lot of professional wrestling references. So I would like to, in turn, give Chance a pro wrestling analogy. Pretty much every round that he has participated, battled, had a match in this tournament, he's lost the popular vote. Mm-hmm. But just like Cody Rhodes, who left WWE and put Stardust behind, built something with AEW, built a name for himself, became the hottest ticket outside of WWE,
he did.
And then triumphantly returned to WWE, every step of the way earning a career victory, just like Chance in this tournament through improbable odds. Many people said Cody Rhodes couldn't do it, and he did. Then he got to WrestleMania 39.
Yes.
With the chance to finish the story, pardon the pun.
The chance.
With the chance to finish the story, and Cody Rhodes, in that moment, did not.
No, he did not.
Chance, the Gila Monster, we love you, but this tournament is your WrestleMania 39. Mm-hmm. It will take you next year to finish your story, because in my mind, Victor E. Green has done enough to move on to the final.
Wow, Victor E. Green in the final. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. I agree. He'll come back stronger after this.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to hear about it, but it's the right thing to do. It is best for business. Victor E. Green has moved on. So who will Victor E. Green face in our Mascot Madness final? We have Howler of the Arizona Coyotes, who has made it out of the cat division somehow, some way.
As a dog, correct?
Facing.
Again, if you squint hard enough, the damn thing looks like a cat. I'm telling you. Just do the test. Just find a picture, squint, and tell me I'm wrong.
Faces your buddy and mine, NJ Devil. 52% of the vote. That is close.
Yeah.
So this is a pick'em here.
Yeah.
This is a tough one.
Might have some voting anomalies in Arizona.
There was a company-wide email. We can confirm that was sent.
Let's spell it out. So NJ is great. NJ's done bits with us. He's appeared in promos for this very show. We should disclose that. NJ is a very jovial sort. Does a great job at Devil's Games. I would say that's a franchise that could probably use a win at this point. That being said, the Arizona Coyotes sent an internal company-wide email about Howler in Mascot Madness. he had a sit down interview with a local journalist that they put online. they've been there were players on the team hyping up his candidacy.
That's correct.
For this tournament. Yep. You gotta respect the hustle, don't you?
Yeah, you do. NJ Devil on most nights, many nights, is the best mascot in the NHL.
Yes.
But this is a best of one.
Correct.
And anyone has a puncher's chance.
Right.
At any point, the greatest fighter in the history of fighting can be knocked out with one well-timed and placed punch.
Here's why I'm going to put Howler over. He is the mascot for the Arizona Coyotes. The Coyotes play at Mullet Arena on the campus of Arizona State University. There is a very good chance that Howler has had to entertain each fan individually during the game because there's so few of them at these games.
Oh,
so
my.
Because he's got more responsibility, I think we have to put him in the final.
So to your point, company-wide email, players involved.
Yeah.
Also, influencers involved as well. There's videos out there of Arizona, influencers with like hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram getting involved in mascot madness. And like I said, NJ Devil on many nights in the National Hockey League is the best mascot in the NHL, just not on this day.
Yeah.
And so Howler, so
there you go,
moves on.
Arizona versus Dallas in the final. If this was real life, our bosses would be having an aneurysm right now. But in the mascot madness,
it's okay.
A money matchup, baby.
So we're going to put up a vote to crown the 2024 mascot madness champion. Will it be Victory Green or will it be Howler? And we will reveal the winner on Tuesday's show. What a tournament it has been.
I mean, yeah.
A lot of upsets.
Mm-hmm.
It really has been madness in March, now April.
Yeah. And I believe Arda has already committed to singing One Shining Moment at the end of the tournament to highlight all of the furries competed.
Are there any nets to cut down? Like, do we just go cut down the skate laces? That we're going to do? All right, thanks for listening and watching us here on The Drop. Remember, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as the NHL on ESPN YouTube. Enjoy the pucks this weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday.
Take care, everyone.